It's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's a magic marker. A felt pen.
It's a mistake.
It's a trap.
It's a fucking comedy.
It's quiet. Maybe too quiet.
It's all happening.
It's a good day to die.
It's a good day to talk about movies.
Welcome back. It is a good day to talk to Keen McCrae. I am your host, Duncan. Joining me, as always, is Gardner.
Welcome back, folks. Excited to have you back. We got a great one for you today.
Yes, we definitely can't wait to share this awesome interview with you. Keen McCrae, who is known for being a all-around filmmaker, but an actor, a writer, director, like I said, pretty much everything involved in filmmaking. Also has a very interesting story that he shared with us. Just all-around really cool stuff. And has a new feature film as well, Shot in the Dark, which is not available to the public yet. So don't worry, no spoilers in this interview about it. But we do talk about the making of that and when you guys will be able to watch that, along with his entire career. So this is GDT, where we talk about movies we love and interview independent filmmakers. Every Friday, we host our full episode where we interview someone from the filmmaking process. Today, we are lucky enough to share our interview with Keen McCrae with you. And on top of that, we have various weekly bonus episodes releasing on different days, sometimes MCU-related episodes or other superhero-related episodes. We have the new Marvel movie, Thor 4, for you. And then after that, we'll be sharing with you the next film in our MCU recap and also a recap of season 3 of The Boys. Check out all of our bonus episodes and, like I said, our Friday full-length episodes anywhere you listen to podcasts. Our last interview is with Ben Young, and we are very excited, like I said, to talk to Keen McCrae today. I already mentioned there's no real need for a spoiler warning today, so we can pretty much jump right into this if you guys are ready. Gardner, what do you think?
Absolutely. Why keep the people waiting? We got a great interview in store for them. Let's just jump right into it.
All right. Here it is, right now, our interview with Keen McCrae.
We are joined now by a special guest, Keen McCrae. Filmmaker, actor, writer, director, all-around creative, is here today to talk to us about his work. Keen, thanks for being here.
Welcome. How you doing?
We're doing really good. We're excited to ask you a whole ton of questions about a whole ton of different things. But before we do that, I figure we'll share a little bit about yourself with the audience. Keen has not only acted in many projects, films, shorts, including the film Wild, where he worked alongside Reese Witherspoon and Laura Dern. But Keen has also directed the feature film Shot in the Dark, wrote and directed the short Howdy, and he's the director of many music videos, including several for the band More, fronted by his brother, Malcolm McCrae. You can find Keen's work on his website, KeenMcCrae.com, and you can also follow him on Instagram, @KeenMcCrae, both of which will be linked in our podcast description. But I'm sure that there's much more to tell our audience about, so how did I do on that background?
Good. No notes. I'm from, or originally from Alabama. Now I live in LA, but I didn't grow up fully in Alabama. We moved around quite a lot. I was born in Philadelphia, then we hopped around to New York City and San Francisco, and Malcolm was born in New York, my sister was born in San Francisco, and then we went to Alabama.
And Dropout is in your Instagram bio. Are you a a dropout?
I'm not really a dropout. I just didn't go to college. I guess that counts. I was supposed to go to Swanee. You know Swanee, Tennessee?
Yeah.
And I deferred for a year and moved out to LA and started working out here and deferred a second year and just never went. Stayed in LA.
Were you going to go for film and then you were just getting practical experience and said, I don't need it?
They don't have film there, so I don't know what I would have studied. Probably something weird like literature, even though that was my worst subject in high school. I didn't have a plan. I didn't have a life plan. I was a floater and found my way out to LA. I was modeling at first. And then I started working at Fox and fell in love with movies. We grew up, we weren't really allowed to watch too many things. We weren't allowed to watch TV on Saturdays. So I didn't really get into film until I was like 19.
So you've given us an awesome background already, and I'd love to start there. You just mentioned Fox working there, giving you that spark, I guess, is probably the right way to say it, into this love for film that clearly has become a big part of your life, right?
It was Fox, like walking around the Fox lot. There's a mural on one of the stages of William Wellman, who's my great, great, great uncle, who won Best Picture for Wings, the first ever Oscar for Best Picture. Kind of crazy. So I learned all that history while I was there. I didn't really know that stuff. And my mom is Wellman. My mom probably told me, I didn't mention, but I didn't care. I was like, oh, old person, black and white movies, boo. But now I love all types of films and stuff. But really, it was Malcolm, my brother, was an actor. He was really good. And he was pretty popular in Birmingham, in our little community, for acting and stuff like that. And so he had a manager out here, and through that manager, I started going to acting class with Craig Archibald, really great acting coach, became my mentor and started watching movies with me because I had no friends. I was 19, just moved out here on my own. So we started watching movies, and he started with things like Chinatown and Taxi Driver, Place in the Sun, all those good classics. And yeah, that's sort of where I started falling in love with it.
Was your initial objective to be an actor, or did you know that you wanted to be like behind the camera?
It was to be an actor. I was really shy growing up, and felt like that would be a good way to get over it. And going to acting classes, easy to meet friends that way. So those were all the reasons.
Is that what led to you getting into writing and directing, is just like having that exposure to other people who were doing that kind of thing?
Yeah. I mean, I always liked directing. I always found watching the camera really interesting while watching movies. And I really like problem solving as a person. So just watching movies, figuring out that the different looks are due to different lenses, different lighting techniques, camera movements, and all that made my brain excited. And then my friends and I wrote Shot in the Dark and made it, because it's really hard to get work as an actor, and all of my friends were actors, and so we just kind of make this movie together.
So that was one of our next questions, was getting into obviously making a feature film, which is not a small endeavor, I would say.
No, but none of us had an idea. I hadn't made anything before. I went to night cinematography class just to learn a few more things about cameras and the technical terms for things. And we made like, I don't know, two little short films for that class, but they were $0, and it was just me and my camera and like a buddy or two. So walking into Shot in the Dark, I planned out the shot list, and I think initially there were 40 setups a day that were planned, which is ridiculous if you've ever made anything. So we had to slash that down. The first day of production, well, we started with the flashbacks, which were all handheld. So those moved pretty quickly, and I didn't really do shot lists for those. We were just sort of running around and grabbing things, because it's kind of easy to do that. That's what Jean-Marc Vallée and Eve, the cinematographer for Wild, I was there for a week, but watched them just do that. They were just running around with the camera handheld, using lamps that were in the shot, and there weren't any movie lights or anything like that. So that went really well, those flashbacks. And then I wrote, I wanted it to look like David Fincher, which is really hard to do with no money, when you don't know what the equipment is like. So I had 40 shots a day, and our first day we got 9. So I sat down with my AD, who had never done anything before either. None of these people had worked, none of our crew. So we were figuring that out on the fly. So we would wake up earlier than everybody else, which was really tough because we were shooting like 12, 15 hour days. And we would wake up like an hour before everybody else and go through the shot list, try to combine shots, nix shots that were unnecessary. And we ended up getting 12 to 15 setups a day after that. So, you know, it was rough. We did the first set of shooting was, I think, 3 weeks, maybe 4. But my friend and I edited, Chris McMillan, the lead of that film, edited, and we were putting it together, and it was really bad. So we had to reshoot a lot of the room, and we shot that room like, I don't know, we built it 4 or 5 times.
Did you really, when you were getting started on production, did you really feel like you had bitten off more than you could chew?
Oh, yeah.
Were there moments where you were like ready to walk away? And then how did you find the strength to just, we got to finish this thing?
Well, no, we never wanted to walk away because we got so many people involved. We were up in Reno, away from home. We all took the time off work. So it was, okay, let's just do this. Let's make this happen. People had attitudes because they were exhausted. We had a 15-hour day, then an 18-hour day, then a 21-hour day, and then a 23-hour day. And then I had to fly to LA to audition for a David Fincher show. And I was delirious. I was seeing purple. Things looked purple. And on the way to the plane, I was rushing, and I ducked underneath one of those like rope barrier things, and my pants, the crotch exploded, so I had crotchless pants. Ugh. And I walked in, and Nick Jonas walked out of the room. I was like, what am I doing here?
You made it happen, though. You went in, and you did the audition?
I went in, I did the audition. I had the lines memorized, and they were like, we want you to try this part. So I had to go back outside the room and memorize lines, but my brain was shot. So I flunked. It was really bad.
Did you have more filming after that on Shot in the Dark?
Oh, yeah. Then I flew. I got on a plane right after the audition. I hopped in an Uber and went back to set. But I got there and had to just take a nap for the day.
Hmm. How long was the shoot?
The flashbacks we shot first, because we used those to raise more money. We spent about $12,000 on the flashbacks, and we shot those in about 2 weeks, probably. And then principal photography, what we call principal photography for the rest of the movie, we did like 3 or 4 weeks.
Mm.
But like I said, we were editing it, and it was goddamn bad. It was terrible. So then over the next like 5 years, we were editing and shooting pickups whenever we had an idea, like on weekends. And we were editing at night because we all had full-time jobs. So I had a lot. I was up till like 3 a.m. most of those 5 years.
So I didn't realize that the production was that long.
Oh, yeah.
It was over 5 years. And you're now taking it out into the world, going to festivals, right?
Oh, yeah. Thank God.
So what does that feel like? Are you... You're going into festivals now with a movie that you've been working on for 5 years. Are you just like really excited for people to see it now? Or are you just like, oh, thank God, we're like over, we're done.
You want the truth?
Always.
I don't want people to not go watch it, but no, I'm sick of the thing. I've been watching it way too much. It was really, really fun to go to Boston Sci-Fi Film Festival. That was our first U.S. sort of U.S. festival. That was really fun, like hanging out with filmmakers that are all around the same level. Yeah, that was really fun. I mean, we were one of the first movies to play, so most of the festival people hadn't gotten there yet. But we were nominated for a couple things, so that part was really fun. But I'm so sick of the movie. And I'm so much better now as a filmmaker than I was back then when I was writing down 40 setup shots.
We do promise to ask you questions about some other things in your career as well.
No.
Okay. I know you're saying, you know, we're...
I mean, it's interesting. I don't care.
We do love hearing about it, but, you know,
I don't
want
to... I made the thing to learn. It was film school for me. And luckily, it's not all that bad.
So when you were deciding, and I guess... It might have been not just you, but you said you were working on it with lots of friends as well. But when you guys were thinking about what the subject matter was going to be, is this something that you see yourself kind of having a career doing stories like this? Or is this just a story that you want to tell and the next one's going to be completely different? You know, like, are you kind of, do you want to jump genres, or is this kind of your story? Is this your genre?
I would love to jump genre. I would love to be like... Sam Raimi kind of goes back to his old Evil Dead days, but he's done other things too. One of my favorite directors is Jonathan Demme. He's done a bunch of different stuff. Something Wild is one of my favorite films. Silence of the Lambs is another one. He's just so good. Yeah, no, this story came from Chris. This was Chris's kind of creation. He was a veteran and just had a lot of trauma to deal with and wanted to put that on screen. And I when we started, my dad was diagnosed with brain cancer. So I was dealing with loss. And I fell in love for the second time. So that all kind of like got into the picture.
It does feel very like therapeutic thematically.
Yeah.
I think that came through because I feel like films with this kind of subject matter, they can be tricky to pull off, right? You don't want to come across as like exploitative in any sense. But I think when you have that real genuine emotion from the people creating it going into the story, I thought it came across really, really well.
Thank you. Yeah, Chris did a great job.
Mm-hmm.
He's great. Down in the chair.
So you talked about how you feel you have improved since you started work on Shot in the Dark. I'd love to ask you about some of your more recent work. Particularly, I'm really drawn to the music videos that you have done recently, particularly the music videos for More. I think there is some really fascinating production and direction that you are bringing to that. What is that process like for you? When do you get brought in to work on those music videos?
Well, the last three that are out, I'm working on the fourth one right now. They wanted to do sort of a series on that. So it's pretty early on. And Kane, Malcolm's bandmate, wanted visuals to work with, but we didn't get started to that early, but he wanted it then. But it's really easy to work with them because Malcolm's my brother and Kane is Malcolm's best friend and a lot like Malcolm. So it's a lot of back and forth and they've got their own ideas that they're very careful with what their songs are about. So they want the song's message to kind of come through the visuals. So that's really fun to play with. And luckily they let me do narrative because that's my favorite. Even if it's a little bit surreal.
And they're not the only band you've worked with. Do you find that working with your brother, you get less creative control than if someone brings you on, hiring you based on your other work?
No, not at all.
No?
No. Well, I got less creative control on Dead Sarah because I don't like that video. It's bad. They chose my least favorite treatment. And then scheduling wise on that, we were in the sand. I didn't know that trekking through sand would take so much time away from shooting. But you have to be careful about footprints. So you keep the gear kind of far away. And going to grab a lens and change lens takes like 45 minutes when it should take like 10. And then the tide on the beach came up really early. So we got kicked off 3 hours early. So that shoot ended early without all the footage that I planned on.
How different is, because I have no experience in music videos at all. Not that I have any experience in short films, really. But how different is shooting a music video than a short film?
Well, I haven't gotten any huge budgets yet for short films. So it's all very small teams. Luckily, I've got a really good friend now, Rob Webster. He's a great cinematographer. So it's really fun to work with him because he speaks the same language and can come up with ways to do things cheaply that are still really fun. Like Woman on the Move, Malcolm wanted the whole thing to take place in front of a green screen. And I was like, the hell is that going to work? But we kind of made it work. Most of it is in front of the green screen.
So kind of back up a little bit, can you talk about your journey to making music videos? Because you said that Shot in the Dark was, you know, the first thing you worked on. So where did that, because obviously you're still working in narrative and making short films and stuff. Where did that switch come along and how do you kind of balance that?
I mean, it just started happening. Like, so I did Shot in the Dark. We were wrapping Shot in the Dark up with music and sound design. Best part of the movie, music and sound design. Those guys are awesome. Will Digby did the sound, amazing. And Alexander Taylor did the score. So those guys are really fun. Fun to work with people that know what they're doing. And then I was making Howdy with Brandon Bernath. And we edited Howdy. Brandon got one of his friends, Hernan, to edit. He worked for Tarantino, so he did a really good job. And our trailer for Howdy was out and about. And Brandon met Pokey Lafarge at some, I don't know, vintage, like, boutique. I don't know what the heck it was, downtown in L.A. And he was like, hey, Pokey! And Pokey turned around and was like, what's up, man? And they became friends because Brandon is like that. And then Brandon got us the gig to, he showed Pokey the trailer for Howdy, and Pokey was like, oh my gosh, this is great. So we got to do our first music video for Pokey called Fuck Me Up, which is a really fun one. Kind of Coen Brothers-y, and that was great. We got to stretch our they gave us 5K to start with, but we pushed it to 9. And we went up to this little town, Randsburg, California, where a lot of people that ride like those ATV cars, I don't know, they look really fun. But it's this old coal town, coal mining town or something like that. It still has the cat houses where the prostitutes would sleep with the guys coming back from work. It's got the little jail there. It's got the same like exterior as it did back in the 1800s. So that was really cool. But that was our first music video. And then Malcolm Kane wanted me to do one, but Warner wasn't sold on my capabilities. So they did their first two music videos with somebody else. And then I finally got a chance and I did Elaborate Attractions, the one where they're looking for lemons. And Malcolm had, he wrote the song to sort of have a circular through line, which is really similar to the hero's journey. So we kind of played on the hero's journey, and I used a 360 camera for the whole shoot just because of the circle, and I could spin that thing whenever I wanted to. And that was a weird video, so they liked it, and I've gotten to continue.
That takes me to another question I had for you, which is you have so many really visually arresting shots in your videos, and a lot of times I end up kind of scratching my head, like, how, you know? And I wanted to ask you, like, what was the most difficult shot you've ever had to pull off? Because some of them look really challenging.
I don't know. Gosh, I try to push myself each time.
Too many to count, huh?
Yeah. I do a lot of them. I don't know. The 360 camera was honestly pretty easy because you put it on the end of the, I put it on the end of like a long monopod that initially is 7 feet tall, and then I put a mini one on top of that, so I got like a 12-foot long pole to put the camera on. And the way that those lenses work is in the center of the seam, the thing disappears, the stuff disappears, so you can't see the pole. But I was just throwing that, like waving that thing around and moving with them, and since it's 360, it acts like a gimbal and keeps the shot really smooth. So that was actually fairly easy. The hard part was that it just kept overheating in the heat, and I couldn't really tell what we were shooting. I was like, yeah, I think it should be this close to the face, or I think it should be like this close for a medium. So that was just a bunch of guesswork. The hardest shots are when we're on a dolly, like shot in the dark. Since we didn't have a crew, whenever we were on a dolly and having to pull focus, that was the hardest thing to do. But luckily, Rob has started out as an AC and can pull focus really well. So anything I throw at him, he makes look really easy.
I was going to say, it definitely worked. You could not have convinced me that you guys had any trouble with that after seeing the end product, because I loved it in the film.
Cool. Thank you.
And when you're talking about your directing and storytelling style, you mentioned Fincher when you were talking about Shot in the Dark. Is there people in the industry or films in general, maybe not a filmmaker, that you would say influence you in your style when it comes to being behind the camera or even trying to tell a story?
All the time. I mean, it depends on who I'm watching at the moment or who I'm into. Like, recently it's been Sam Raimi, because I just watched the Evil Dead films for the first time this year, and I was like, why didn't I watch these when I was making Shot in the Dark? Like, the first Evil Dead is brilliant, and you can just stick a camera, if it's small enough, or you can manhandle a camera, put it anywhere, do whatever you want with it. I've been watching him a lot recently, especially for Woman on the Move, and this next one that's coming out, Anything Can Happen. Those are big Raimi influences. Yeah, back then, I was, for Shot in the Dark, we were watching a lot of David Fincher. That was dumb, because he's got huge budgets and can take 90 takes, and we could take like 3 to 6. So I would say, if you're trying to make something, look out for filmmakers that have done things cheaply and see what works and figure out how you can do that same stuff. And I've been playing with After Effects, like Moment on the Move was the first time I played with After Effects, and I wanted it to look kind of, you know, handmade and quote crappy. But gosh, you can do so much by yourself.
Well, that's interesting that you mentioned being able to do so much by yourself. Are you talking specifically about the post-production process there?
Yeah, about post-production. But if you understand post, like working in Premiere or Final Cut or whatever you want to work in, and you can check out After Effects, then you can kind of know, if you have an idea for a shot, how to piece it together. Like, what are the pieces that I need for this thing to work? Or how can I rotoscope this guy out the easiest way? How do I shoot it so that it's not a pain in the ass for me later?
How would you describe your directing style? I feel like everyone has different approaches to not just working with actors, but working with your collaborators, your DP, your sound, art direction. How would you describe it?
Anybody that's good at their job is a really good collaborator here. My favorite part of pre-production is going over everything with the cinematographer, because that's sort of where you're imagining how things look and how they come together. And you can talk about the edits, if you're doing colors, talk about the types of lenses that you want to use, or what sensor would be the best. I haven't worked with film yet. I really want to. And that's, I don't know, I really like that because it's all technical. You don't have to get all emotional about anything. Actors, I like working with actors beforehand. When I get to set, I'm pretty hands off, like, unless something's not working. If it's not working, then it's sort of a collaborative effort to figure out what to do to nail the scene or nail the moment or to nail the, what's it called? I don't know. Like, if you're going from one shot to the next shot, like understanding, the level of, what's it called?
Like momentum?
Yeah, I guess momentum would work. Momentum works. Yeah. Like the kinetic energy between things.
Is your approach there, is that influenced by your experience as an actor and knowing how you like to be directed and knowing how the people around you like to interact with the director?
Yeah, it lends a certain freedom to acting. If, you know, you go over the scene and everybody knows what it's about and what's going on, then you can just kind of play. And it's not like you're trying to be exact. I think trying to be exact is really a mood killer. And so it's more about just keeping things fun and open and trying to keep the environment light, even though you're, as a director on set, you're always stressed about time. You're getting so many questions from all of the department heads, like, what about this? Do you want to see this? Do you want to see that? It's like, oh no. Let's just wait till the camera's up, all right? And then we'll look at this pink one or this yellow one. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, also on Wild, he barely gave me any direction at all. He would just let you go. And then if you saw something you liked, you'd be like, I like this. Try something else here. And that would be pretty much all the notes, the kind of notes you get. Same on CBGB. You know, I was there for a day. That was the first thing I did. But it was Alan Rickman was in front of me. The power went out while we were shooting. We were shooting in Savannah in a warehouse in the middle of this thunderstorm. They built the set, like the fake CBGB with all the stickers and the grime and stuff in this warehouse. And the power went out while we were about to shoot my scene. So I got to talk to Alan Rickman for a good 30, 40 minutes. It was really fun. He was very frightening. His eyes could just see your soul. It was crazy. Even then, I barely got any direction. I think most of the directing sort of happens in pre-production and then is kind of managing the problems as they arise, because you're just going to run into them no matter what you do.
And you've talked about working with people who you know, and also the fact that being a good collaborator is one of the most key components of being a good filmmaker. Do you see yourself continuing to collaborate with the same individuals when it comes to both behind the scenes stuff as well as actors? Obviously, a lot of them are people you already know, but do you see yourself having the same cast members in movies going forward?
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, it would be great to open up and get some names in my stuff. That would be fun. But it'd be fun to have like a Bruce Campbell that's always there, like in Spider-Man or in Doctor Strange, the pizza ball guy.
That's exactly what I was thinking. I mean, with all the Sam Raimi talk, I was like, you gotta have a guy, right? Or a girl, obviously.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I would even be that guy I was just in my buddy's short film, Blake Simon. Oh, there's a name for you. Blake Simon, he works for James Mangold right now, so he's a good one. Blake, yeah, put me in as a little bit role, which I took as a Bruce Campbell moment.
Would you rather do that, be inserted by your friends, than is it tough to be the director and act?
It is.
I'm always curious how people manage that.
It's rough. It's not really fun unless it's like comedy or like your Taika Waititi and you're playing Morg or whatever that kind of name is.
That's kind of easy acting, which would be really fun. But it's really tough. Like, shot in the dark, luckily, my character was just me.
I just had to walk in front of the camera and do nothing, which was perfect. But yeah, I mean, I could get better at it. But it's easier to be an actor and to know what goes on behind the camera, to know the mess that's going on in everybody's head. So it's nice when you work with professional actors to know what the hell they're doing, know to hit their marks, to stand in the light, to know where around the camera lens to look. Without having to poke somebody through that, that's great. And being on the other side of the camera, you get to learn all that stuff because you figure out what looks good and what works for different moments. So that's really helpful.
And you mentioned, obviously, the goal would be to get some big names in your films as well, which does beg the question, are there any specific actors or actresses in Hollywood that you would say are your holy grails to be in your film one day? Because I feel like everyone has.
I mean, not really. It would depend on the role. Like, well, Jack Nicholson is my all-time favorite, but I think he's out. That would have been epic. Yeah, I don't know. It would be fun to work with Eddie Murphy. That would be kind of fun. I would love to work with anybody.
Eddie Murphy's a tough one to get out of hiding.
I think so. Bill Murray, that would be really fun. I don't know. He just got me too. But
well, I'm hearing a lot of comedians.
Yeah, I mean, I'm working on the feature film for Howdy, and that's sort of funnier. It's like Raising Arizona ish. Nick Cage would be fun. I don't know. I could be anybody. Margot Robbie, Brad Pitt, Leonardo DiCaprio, Robert De Niro, Christian Bale, even though he'd be so intimidating. Natalie Portman, frickin' anyone. I don't care.
Yeah, of course. I didn't see or hear one bad name in the bunch, obviously. That was a great list of people that I'm sure anyone would love to work with as well.
It would be fun. I mean, for a director, I would freaking love Paul Thomas Anderson. That would be fun.
Yeah, you're definitely speaking our language here on this podcast. If you drop that kind of name, we are, I mean, big fans, I would say.
Did you guys see Licorice Pizza?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, not to go on a Licorice Pizza tangent here, but it wasn't even like my favorite PTA movie at all, but it's, I think, one of the perfect examples of something that a past guest has said, who all the listeners will remember, Dave, where it was like, he's someone who just, he makes great films, and then sometimes he makes masterpieces.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, sometimes it's a perfect film, sometimes it's just great. The bottom of his movies are great, so I love all of them, basically.
Exactly. Well, I loved it. I thought it was great. I mean, it's not my favorite. I think my favorite is Punch Drunk Love or Boogie Nights.
Boogie Nights is my favorite. I don't know why. I can't get it off that one.
It's so good. I would love, that's sort of like Howdy too. Like fun, big. It doesn't have to do with the porn industry, but that's okay.
Might make it easier to get financing.
Guys, it was all about family, not porn. But I saw Licorice Pizza on film, and that was awesome.
Yeah, I bet.
It definitely changed my experience. If I watched that streaming, I would have been like, okay, cool.
I have that same kind of experience. Like, I remember I saw Mulholland Drive on film in Durham, and it was, you know, I'd seen the movie, what, like 5 times already? But it is just the texture of it and the warmth that is a different experience.
The flicker, it's so different. It's weird. I saw Mulholland Drive on film too at the Egyptian, and it was awesome. I want to see Blue Velvet on film. That would be fun.
It's sad that the film projection, like, it just, it's such a rarity. It just, like, doesn't exist anymore. You got to go to, I mean, shit, where I live in the mountains of Western North Carolina, I got to drive 45 minutes to go to a movie theater that has a huge aisle in the middle of it.
Yeah.
And I don't get that experience. So when I'm jealous of people, you know, who like live in LA and they have all these great theaters where you can go catch showings like this.
I know. I'm the Beverly. Have you heard of the Beverly Quentin Tarantino's theater?
Oh, yeah.
That's right down the block from me. So that's pretty great. That's always on film. Nothing digital.
Would you, if you got the chance, would you shoot on film? I'm going to guess it's a yes.
Oh, yeah. I love film. I mean, it would be kind of scary because digital, you get to see, you can say, oh, wait, play that back. Let's see if we got that moment right there. And then we can move on. But yeah, in film, I guess it would take a different set of focusing skills, like paying attention to what the hell is in front of you and trusting your cinematographer. But I definitely would. I want to very badly. We just haven't had the budget to do that with all my crazy shot ideas.
Well, it sounds like you have a solid coterie of collaborators that you trust, that if you were to get that opportunity, you'd know who to bring on.
Oh yeah, definitely. That's what all 12 years out here was kind of doing, you know, making friends and buddies with other talented folks.
And I just want to circle back because you had mentioned the Howdy feature film. I was wondering what you could tell audience members who have seen Howdy, and maybe if you don't want anything spoiled, if you haven't watched the short film yet, this would be a good time to turn it off.
No, it's okay. I won't spoil anything that happens.
Okay, so no spoilers then. Okay.
No spoilers. We were working on the feature first, and we knew we wanted to do something with music and bands in 1971 in the country music scene. And we wanted the story to be about three brothers so that we could act, get Malcolm in there, and get Brandon in there, and myself. And as we were writing the feature, we got to this moment where we were like, what happened to the brothers? And so we wrote the short film for that. We rushed the short film. Our cinematographer for that, about 2 weeks production, ran into some family tragedy, and that led to a divorce, and so he kind of skedaddled, and we were going to use all of his equipment for free, which was like Movi and his Red and his nice like antique Russian lenses, and we weren't going to have to pay for that or him. And then he left, and we had 2 weeks before shooting, and we had to take it because the location we had already paid for. So we had to scramble and find another cinematographer, and my shot list was like out the window because I was going to just be moving the camera the whole time. But that's kind of expensive. So yeah, we sort of switched it all up. So the short film was really fun, I think, but it was going to be a lot different. Anyway. Audiences, like when we watch Howdy with audiences, people have a great time. But we're working on the feature, and the feature takes place 5 years after the short film. And so it's about the three brothers trying to become famous in the country music scene. They get out of prison and just work their way up from the bottom. They try to go to Country Ray, who runs this radio station called XERB, which is based on Wolfman Jack, or maybe it's a different name. Wolfman Jack's station is XERB, because he just blasts the tunes across AM, which reaches, I think, half the world. So that's our destination. We want to get on to Country Ray's radio station. While that's happening, we've got this character, Eldon Pickard, who's based on Porter Wagoner, who had this television show, The Porter Wagoner Show, and he is the one that introduced the world to Dolly Parton. So we've got a character based on Dolly Parton, named her Lottie Bizette, and it's at the end of their relationship. Lottie wants to leave the television show and do her own thing and break her contracts with him, and he's in love with her, and she's not in love with him. She's got big boobs. Good. And while that's happening, the television station is also, or his TV show is kind of going down the gutter, because the television shows that are becoming popular are called Urban. And that's kind of like disco and Soul Train, kind of stuff like that. So that's what's becoming popular. So he's kind of figuring out what to do. And since Lottie Brissette is leaving, he is going to hold a competition for seven new girls to fill Dolly Parton's shoes. And so one of our other main characters is one of those girls, Addie Atkins. And she would be probably a Native American that
comes from a trailer park that rides a motorcycle. And so it's different stages of fame kind of building up into one nice moment.
What stage are you at in that process? Are you still writing early stages?
We're still writing, yeah. I'm letting Brandon Renath take the lead on writing, and I'm just helping him sort of craft it and form it. Yeah. I think the first draft of the script just got done. He is tidying some things up before he sends it to me. But it would be a really fun one. We want to do it sort of big and cartoony. Like, I don't know if you've seen those suits that they wear back then with all the rhinestones, like nudie suits, bright colors, big hair. Fun. It would be really fun.
Oh, yeah. And Gardner mentioned earlier that you had named a lot of comedic actors. And then obviously you mentioned a lot of other actors as well. But do you see this film having a heavy comedy element as well? I mean, it seems like it's got a lot to it, obviously, where you know, it's very adventure and wholehearted in the end, you know, and like family and stuff like that. It's got many different angles. Do you see comedy being a big element as well?
I think, yeah, comedy would be a big element. It would be sort of more on the, I don't know how to explain the comedy, but it's kind of Coen Brothers comedy in a way, like Raising Arizona comedy, like really good, funny dialogue, but in serious situations.
I'm definitely sold on that. You probably couldn't pitch a comedy in a way that would get me more excited than that. Big Lebowski being one of my all-time favorites.
Big Lebowski's great, yeah. It wouldn't be as aimless.
Well, no, I mean all of their films though too. I do have to shout out my personal.
Yeah, no, I know, I love that. I think Raising Arizona is probably my favorite. I just like the colors. Barry Levinson, the cinematographer, who's also the great director.
I think that's something to be said about. There's plenty of filmmakers out there that this can be said about, but the Coen brothers are a good example of it. That you could pick pretty much any one of their films, and you would have a very sound argument for saying this is my favorite of their films. You know what I mean? Like, no one is right or wrong for picking, I think, any of their films over any other.
Oh yeah,
in that catalog.
I don't like Blood Simple. That's just me though.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, everyone's got their favorites and their, you know, the ones that they're not that into, of course.
So you mentioned working with Brandon on the script here and that you've worked with him in the past, like on Howdy. How involved are you in the writing process? Clearly, you're involved from a conceptual level, but because I know that you've written screenplays before. Would you consider yourself a screenwriter?
Not really. I like taking ideas and making them better. If there's already ideas in place, then I can have my own ideas to add to it. So Brandon is doing the heavy work on Howdy. And I'm working on a script with my fiance. She's writing a story that would be really fun about the first female messiah. And it all circles around food. This really popular barbecue sauce in Louisiana, turns out, is made with period blood.
Is this another comedy?
It is a comedy, but it's also it's another one of those like comedy bends.
I love it. That's one of my favorite aesthetics.
I know, exactly. I'm after doing Shot in the Dark, I was like, I don't want to do dark things. This is no fun. I'm sitting here staring at the screen of this guy going, ah, I don't want to do that.
Yeah, I hear you. Although I will say, as I was watching Shot in the Dark, Duncan has talked a lot on this podcast about movies being Duncan movies, where he loves sci-fi and films with twists and stuff like that. And like one of my favorite movies ever is, you know, The House That Jack Built. I like dark, like depressing shit. So I was watching Shot in the Dark and I was like, this is like a Gardner movie. I can understand why being on the creative side of it would get a little exhausting.
It's heavy, man. Even Chris, like, he got freaked out because he had to be in that headspace for 5 years. That was a long time for that guy. He went a little crazy, to say the least.
Must have taken a toll.
It definitely took a toll.
He didn't start sending like dead rats in packages to other cast members or anything?
No, like Jared Leto, no. Yeah. Luckily, he wasn't playing the Joker. And luckily, he didn't tie himself to a chair just to be tied to a chair.
Good, good.
We have talked a lot about five-year filmmaking when it comes to one film, which I do think ends up showing in the final product. I think if you turned away or decided, oh, we'll just finish it right now earlier on, the film wouldn't be what it is now.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people told us to just quit and just put it out there, but we didn't want to do that.
And I don't, you know, I have no idea what it looked like, let's say 2 years in, 3 years in, so I have no idea if it was, like, good to go then, but I'll say that it seems like a lot of care.
Yeah, there was a lot of care that went into it. 3 years in, it was like 3 hours, 30 minutes long. There was like a plane exploding from like B-roll from Adobe Stock. It was bad.
But obviously, every filmmaker runs into obstacle after obstacle. I think a classic line is that no plan survives the enemy. And I would say when you're making a film, the enemy is probably like day one of shooting or something like that, where like you're never going to get everything exactly. There's going to be some obstacle right down the line.
Yeah.
So with all that being said, we've obviously talked about a lot of the, oh, like what was the biggest problem during production, post-production, all that. What's the easiest part of filmmaking?
Oh, I don't know about the easiest part. I think it's all kind of tough because writing is really tough. You gotta figure out what you want to tell, and then you gotta put it together in a really interesting way. And the script has to sort of speak for itself to get to raise the money, and then raising the money is no fun. Asking people for money that they might not get back isn't a fun job. And then prepping, I think maybe pre-production might be the easiest part. Because even when you're done with the film and you're watching it with an audience, it's a little bit nerve-wracking. I think pre-production is probably the most fun. You know that you are going to, your fruits of labor are going to happen. So it's the most fun because it's happening, you know? So you get to plan it. And yeah, I think that's the most fun. But I love being on set. The set is probably my favorite place to be.
What would you consider to be, I think this is an interesting question I've asked a few times and I get varied answers. What would you consider to be like something you look back on in your career so far and you're like, that was a big win? I'm really happy that happened.
I think elaborate attractions, honestly. Using a 360-degree camera for the whole thing is a bit of a stretch for some people who have their heads around. And it kind of worked out because it's got crazy stuff in it. And that kind of opened up my brain hole into trying to do that with the regular camera and a lens, kind of come up with the craziest things that I could.
Was that a moment where you surprised yourself, or it was the reaction of other people?
The moment it was when I surprised myself the most, definitely.
That's interesting because you hear a lot about when we make art and the response you get from people, the reception, the feedback. But I think something that isn't discussed enough is, I mean, you're making art, right, to express something in yourself, to get something out into the world. And when you are really happy with it, I think that is equally, if not more valuable than, you know, whatever nice feedback you get from, you know, your cousin or whatever.
Oh, I think it's better. I think it's what you're looking for when you go into it, is something that makes you feel like you are being seen or heard, and it's not filtered, and it's you on the screen that other people are watching, whether they like it or not. I think, you know, Kevin Smith probably runs into that a lot.
But he does it. He's completely honest.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying, is that, yeah, that I think he's really proud of everything he does. Like, it's just who he is, and it's hard to do that. It took me a while to figure that out, and Elaborate Attractions is definitely the first one that I did that with. So that one sort of opened the door up for me. And then this like slew of black and white music videos for more, I've been leaning into that, going my direction. So I think that's why these have sort of turned out to be the best so far.
I do think you can specifically see a point in Kevin Smith's career where he, sorry, I'm going,
no, I have to, no, Kevin keep that, right, this now. Is what I have about. To.
I think there was a point where he was very concerned about the critics and this, that, and the other. And then there came a point where he was like, I'm going to make movies with my friends. Exactly, for me and for like the people who care about the Viewisk universe, or, you know, his thing.
Yeah,
people are really into Jay and Silent Bob and Clerks 3, and that's
hell yeah. Like Clerks Clerks is amazing.
Right, exactly. Like, and yes, and I think it holds up to this day. I will stand by that to the end of my days. But I think there became a point in his career where he was like, I just don't care what the critics think anymore. And there was a point where he did, I think, care about the critics. And you can,
yeah, he was with the Weinsteins, you know, and they're pushing all their pushing everything with Miramax and trying to get all those awards and stuff. But I don't know. I think he does a great job. He's cool. So Sam Raimi, same thing. Like, he's doing whatever the fuck he wants, and it's really fun. And he's all about the fun. So
it is wild. I do have to shout this out because a former guest of the pod, Andrew Roberts, has pointed this out to me. Sam Raimi's last film before Multiverse of Madness was the Wizard of Oz film.
Yeah. It was like 9 years ago.
It was like almost a decade earlier. It's crazy to me that he had stepped away from directing for that long.
Well, that was because that was such a flop. I mean, I think the studio got involved a lot with that one, and James Franco was really bad.
Which is interesting. Yeah, he went back to Disney for his next film. So
I know. It is weird that he went back to studio, but I feel like he was like, okay, I have to play with these guys. I had a good time watching Dr. Strange.
Yeah, when you can feel his fingerprints on it.
Yeah.
That's what makes it fun.
The best part. It's the best. He's so good with his camera. The writing, I think, was just a little bit weak on that one.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think that Gardner and I have both talked about this, and we had an episode on it as well where we discussed the pros and cons of the Multiverse of Madness. But he definitely had his imprint at points, and then there were points where it was very much like, you have to tell this kind of story, this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just a Raimi film. I think that those are the peaks and the valleys are there. But
I know. Which is so sad because those first two Spider-Man films are freaking amazing. I love them.
It does seem wild to like not just let the guy who made those movies kind of just do whatever he wants. Like literally anything.
I know. Exactly. And they even did that on the third Spider-Man. He did not make the movie he wanted to make on that movie.
You wanted to do four. It would have been a lot better if we had broken up a little bit or didn't want to put him there. Just, you know, hands off there. And I think the person in charge of that, I don't even remember the guy's name who at Sony, but I think that he has admitted to that being maybe.
Avi Arad, I believe.
Is that who it was? Yeah, I think that. Oh, yeah. And I think because Feige was underneath him, right, beforehand?
I think so. I don't know about that.
And Marvel tension here, obviously.
I mean, I think they, on the third Spider-Man, I think they just wanted to make as much money as possible, and the toy companies were like, we need more characters to sell, and that was the death of Sam Raimi's Spider-Man.
Thanks, George Lucas.
Oh man, I just rewatched those prequel movies. Woo! Have you seen them in a while?
Here's the thing. I grew up, the first movie I saw in theaters was The Phantom Menace.
Yeah.
And I grew up with a very Star Wars loving father. So I was introduced to those movies often and with force when I was young.
Yeah.
And honestly, like as a kid, I thought they were great. Like I walked out of The Phantom Menace as a 3 year old being like, well, that was phenomenal, you know, and then like continued to love it for years and years afterwards. So you know what? I'm going to be honest, I always kind of liked them, so...
Yeah, I mean, I'm
the wrong guy to, like, to judge them in a fair way, probably. I'll never be able to do that.
I'm a little nostalgic for them myself, because I was, what, 10, 9 when it came out, 10? So, yeah, but I just rewatched them since watching them as a child, and I was like, what the hell? This is not a love story. These people are not in love. He is talking about being a dictator.
Oh, yeah. Well, 2 is the big problem, yeah.
2 is the one that I find hardest to rewatch. Phantom Menace is like, yeah, it's for kids, and I can just like turn off my brain and just be like, oh, yeah, this is like goofy fun. 2 is fucking boring.
And he wants to be he's like talking about a dictatorship, and she's like, I'm in the Senate. I love you. What?
Yeah, you might be going down the alt-right rabbit hole, but you're cute.
Exactly.
It is so weird, yeah. I have to say that when we would watch them on DVD, like, my dad would just skip every scene there. So I did not watch any of those scenes over for years. We just skipped all the Padme Anakin bullshit. He was like, they're getting married. You know what happens. This is not a love story. He was not happy with any of it.
Let's just watch these lightsabers.
It's like, look, at the end, Mace Windu is going to do some crazy shit, and there's going to be a lot of Jedi death. He was like, look, we're going to skip this and we're going to watch that. But yeah, I agree with that part. Yeah, I'll take the hate on Attack of the Clones.
Yeah. And that Obi-Wan. Do you see that?
The show?
Yeah, the show.
Like, you know, like Duncan said, dude, we grew up with those movies. Like, it's just like...
I mean, that is made for children, for sure. Did you see the, like, the chase scene with Leia?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that was the worst part of the whole show. It was rough.
That was the worst chase scene I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was like some CW bullshit.
It was! It was very CW. That's so right. Oh, my God. Wow.
You know what? Honestly, that is a good point, though. Like, it is, like, just for children, honestly, at that point, because it's, like, you're there for the battles, I think. That's, like, that's the kind of the standout scenes of it. I think the well-done points of it are, like, the battles and filling in gaps that don't really need to be there. But it's, like, yeah, it is for, like, kids who will identify with Leia, for sure. Like, that's, you know, like, it's, like, my point against, like, Jar Jar. It's, like, Jar Jar's not there for, like, a 30-year-old to relate to. He's there for, like, a 5-year-old to be like, yeah, that's a funny character, right? So, yeah. At a certain point, you got to be like, yeah, it is for children. And then, like, but then you can't like be like, all right, well, we should be winning like Emmys or anything for it either, right? You know.
But I mean, you could. I think you can still make it for children and make that believable.
The chase scenes are. I have literally nothing. Like, I don't know what they were thinking there.
There's no defense whatsoever. But like you were saying, like you can make something for kids and have it still be like really solid that everyone can enjoy. Like the original Star Wars movies, Pixar.
Yeah, the original Star Wars, Stand By Me, The Goonies, freaking fun stuff.
Toy Story. I still love watching the Toy Story movies to this day.
Toy Story. Oh, yes. I mean, Soul. Goodness.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet.
I like Soul a lot, too.
Any of the Pixar movies, really.
Yeah, although people are saying that they fell off a little bit now, which I guess I can understand a little bit because I would say they're not as groundbreaking as they used to be, where I felt like it was like masterpiece after masterpiece, but yeah. I've watched them all and I'm like, yeah, that was good. And they always have an A team and a B team, you know, when Soul came out, Soul was the A team and the B team was on Onward. No offense to people who are working on Onward, but I think that you know, when those two dropped the same year, the Oscar one that they were going for was Soul, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
And I appreciated both of them. I was like, yeah, Onward's a fun story. Soul's...
I never saw Onward. I gotta watch that.
It's all right. It's like it's kind of like a brother story. That's how I would describe it. So it's I actually wish I had watched it with my brother. It would have been really cool.
You might want to watch it before you go into production on Howdy. You know, the brother's story.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but they only have two brothers in the Soul movie, so you've one-upped them already. Or not Soul, in Onward.
We have too many characters. We have way too many characters, you know? Goodness. That's been the roughest part because you watch movies and you're like, so much has happened. But really, if you watch a bunch of movies that have a bunch of characters, like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, that has a few storylines that you're following, and barely anything happens in the scenes.
Yeah.
So that's the hard part is wrapping your head around like what's important. I know I love this that's fucking happening right now, but I think we gotta get rid of it. That's hard.
Is that a big part of your capacity as idea puncher upper?
Yeah, I mean, is one of my big contributions is asking questions. It's like, what is this scene for? What is this doing? What is this character's end goal? And is this helping them get there, or is this helping them learn their ultimate, you know, lesson? Mm. So all that stuff is important, and it's tough, especially with Brandon, because Brandon is just like ideas after ideas after ideas that are really, really good.
How do you? Because obviously you can't say yes to them all. How do you tactfully just be like, maybe we save that for another feature?
I'm usually just like quiet. I don't have an emotion on my face while he's telling me all this stuff, no matter if I like it or not. I'm usually just like, and then I can't like right on the spot be like, no, fuck that. That's not gonna work. I'll have to think about it for a few days and sit with it myself and be like, okay, I see how this can work and how that can work, and then I'll come back and we'll talk about it.
I have to ask. I've asked this of a lot of our guests, and as someone who straight up went to California and was like, I'm gonna do this, basically, or went to California and then once you were there, decided you're gonna even crazier actually. Then you're like, all right, you know what? Now that I'm here, I'll do the thing that you know so many people have tried to do. And are now just nailing it, you know, not to hype you up, George, you know, but you're doing it. So the classic question is, how do I do it? How do I become a filmmaker, right? And the classic answer is just do it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh,
Yeah. So if someone has decided to just do it, right? They're like, okay, yeah, I want to just do it. Now what? What's your best advice to that person who's already decided to just do it but doesn't know what where to go next?
I mean, it helped for me to be an actor and to go to acting classes and figure that side of things first. And then I would say don't do what I did and do a feature film like first thing. Until you can like get your hands on some equipment and figure that stuff out. So I would say make short films because cameras are really easy to find these days. And if you want something that changes lenses, those are really easy to find, like SLRs. Just so that you can get your head around camera equipment, like how to move a camera, where to place a camera once you have the script. And then just fucking edit it yourself too. And then while you're editing, you'll be like, okay, my writing is no good. It's not working here. Why isn't it working? And then if you haven't spent any money to shoot it, you can just like get your friends back together and shoot something else until it's working. So I'd say start with the free stuff that you can just do. You learn a lot.
I think that's great. I think the idea of just using the resources that you have, the people around you, just bullshitting, just yes. Getting stuff out and practicing, getting as many hours towards that 10,000 as you can.
Definitely. Even if you can't afford the equipment and you don't have a rental house in your city, I've made things with copper pipes and PVC to make a slider. You can get, you know, that probably costs like $30 to make a slider, but you can also like flip the sliders straight up and you get a semi-crane kind of shot. You just like lift it with a string. You can be creative and then when you don't have a piece of equipment that's, you know, that you think Hollywood should have, if you're on a project, you can be like Sam Raimi and fucking make it.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, you are a problem solver.
Yeah.
And that is something that goes into, I think, a lot of the best directors are. You've gotten ingenuity to see something and see a problem and come up with an unconventional solution.
Yeah.
And if you can do that consistently, that's eventually going to set you apart.
Exactly. Somebody that's really, really great at that is Michel Gondry. He's so good.
Yeah.
He's good. Sam Raimi's great. The Coen brothers copied Sam Raimi. Yeah. Barry Levinson is around for all that too. And I just love their cinematography. I think that little crew is great.
Well, we've talked a lot. We don't want to keep you too long. We've talked a lot about Howdy, the feature, what might be in the works there. Do you have anything else that you want to tease that might be coming up that we and our audience can look out for?
Nothing really. I'm finishing. Literally, I have it open right now behind this Zoom screen, my music video. Anything Can Happen. The last big bang for the series of music videos for More. It's really fun. I was very influenced by Sam Raimi. I've got the Raimi cam, or he calls it the shaky cam, where you put the camera on a plank and make it look like a spirit. And then they initially, the idea was to jump into animation at one point. But after looking into that, it was going to be too expensive and it was going to take way too long for what we wanted to do. So I just shot it as if it was a cartoon. And I was watching a bunch of anime because it's a fight. So it's a lot of anime fun, you know, and anime has all those planes, like you've got the background and then you've got the character in front of that. And then you've got maybe a third element like wind or something like that, but it's all just like in planes. So that's really fun to experiment with. And that's kind of what I was doing this time. And then Howdy, and then I'm working on a script with my fiance. Bad Bobby Menses in the Moonlight or something like that.
That's great.
I think the title will probably be worked on, but I'm pressuring her to work on that because I'm going to do that. I want to shoot that in the South, go back to the South, and yeah, I think that one would be really fun.
I know we're looking forward to it, and I'm sure that our audience So we're looking forward to it as well. Can't wait for everything to be visible for the audiences so that they can see it as well. I really want their festival run for Shot in the Dark to get released afterwards to the general public, because I know a lot of people will be really excited to see it afterwards too. And, you know, obviously the festival run will be a lot of fun too, but
I know
our listeners won't be able to go to most of those showings, unfortunately.
I know. We gotta get that online.
It'll be a lot of fun.
We've got some distribution companies now, and yeah, Raven Banner is kind of helping us with, they're sort of being our sales agent. We've got a few regions that will be streaming it, so we're just waiting on the US, I think.
Awesome. Well,
yeah.
I'm excited. I know that, like I said, our audience will be excited as well. I do have a final question that I like to ask all of our guests.
Do it.
Which is, are there any other filmmakers that you'd like to shout out? Someone who makes movies or music videos that you like to let our audience know about that we could check out their work, maybe?
Yeah. Brandon Bernath, I've been talking about this whole time. Blake Simon, who I think I mentioned earlier, too. He's a good one. Chris Doffer is how he likes his namesake, Christopher McMillan. Chris, who was in Shot in the Dark, he's a talented filmmaker, but he doesn't really have anything to show right now. He's got a lot of scripts and story ideas that he's trying to get off the ground, but yeah.
Thank you very much for sharing those names with us. Like I said, we always love to check those names out, and obviously you've been talking about Brandon the entire time, and Blake, you had mentioned, yeah, so I'm glad to check all their work out, and I'm sure that our audience loves to check their work out as well, so thank you for that, but thank you for this entire interview.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Gardner said it already, but we stole a lot of your time, so I appreciate it.
No big deal. This was fun.
We really do appreciate you hanging out with us tonight and talking to us. And I think that, like I said, it's going to be great for our audience to get to hear all your stories about movies they have been able to see or haven't been able to see yet, and they can get excited about seeing in the future. Either way, I think that you shared a lot of insight on just the filmmaking process, which is the important part. And I think a lot of people really care about that, and they will learn a lot from just hearing you talk about it. So again, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Thank you. We love it. I mean, we would just, if we didn't have an audience, we'd still try to find a way to talk to people whose work we enjoy and just learn as much as we can about that creative process. Just thank you for taking the time.
Do you guys make films?
We dabble. Duncan is actually in the process.
Trying. Yeah. I got a short film coming out soon.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Just got to get the editing kind of done at this point. Film the last couple of shots.
Hell yeah. Are you editing?
Yeah.
Nice. It's tough, bro. It takes a long time. People don't realize how much work goes in.
Yeah. Sometimes 5 years.
Yeah. No kidding. Howdy took 2 years for us to finish.
Damn, really?
Yeah, dude. It was 30 pages long. So we got it down to 19 minutes. And I'm not happy with the sound or the color. We couldn't afford anybody decent. So.
Really?
Yeah.
Hey, I thought it looked good.
That's why I said no dialogue on mine, so I don't have to worry about any sound. I was like, we're just going to play music over the entire film. We're doing a silent movie.
That's perfect. That's the way to go. Do it. I have to shout out my colorist for the feature film for Shot in the Dark, Will Ray. He did a great job. I haven't told him that yet, but we had like 8-10 different kinds of cameras. I shot most of the shit, and I don't know camera settings that well. I'm a cinematographer. So it was all over the place. Like, some shots were red, some shots were purple. Most of it was blue. He did a great job.
A really good colorist can be a fucking miracle worker.
Oh,
I don't understand how they do it.
It just smooths out the whole experience. Same with sound. Sound fixes a lot of bad edits, like edits that you can't fix just because of the footage that you've got.
But I'm lucky I don't have to deal with that very much. I do mostly real estate video, so I do have to deal with like color and like adjusting stuff like that. And then I do some like lifestyle features, and just having to deal with the sound is like the biggest bane of my existence.
You have a Zoom mic?
Yeah, it's what I use.
Yeah.
Which, it's like decent quality audio.
Hey, dude, we did the whole feature on a little Zoom thing.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Well, did you use the XLR inputs, or did you just like...
Yeah, we used the inputs for some lavs, and then we used the actual Zoom thing for our theme.
Okay, well, shit, that makes me feel a lot better.
that's fucking great.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, at the end, we had Will Ray, who designed the sound, and he got some Foley artists, that Sony, to do a Foley, which sounds incredible because it was COVID and nobody was working. It was really lucky.
Mm. Yeah, because the sound in Shot in the Dark, I did not notice anything funky about it at all.
Yeah, no, it's great.
Came out great.
Yeah. Well, sorry to make the ending of this so long, but...
No, not at all. Dude, we're having fun.
Thanks for having me on.
You never have to apologize for talking to us more about your insight and the movies that you make, because we definitely appreciate it. We just don't want to waste your time. But yes, thank you. And to our audience, remember that you can find Keen's work at KeenMcRae.com.
KeenMcRae.
And remember, that is also in the podcast description. So if you are someone who's like the laziest guy in the world and can't even listen to a guy who just spelt out the letters for you, he was kind enough to do that and you can't type it in. Well, even if you're that lazy, the link will be in the bio. And remember, on Instagram, it's the same thing, at Keen McRae, spelt the same way. Just don't type in .com because that's not on Instagram. But those are the places you can find him right now. And when his films are available to the public, we will absolutely be blasting it out on our social media, so be looking there. But I'm sure that you can also find them on his website and his Instagram as well. So why don't you just follow the source instead of us? Again, thank you very much for joining us today. This was amazing.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
There you have it, folks. That was our interview with Keen McRae. Thank you, Keen, for coming on and talking to us for a very long time and about very interesting things. We always appreciate our guests for being so gracious to spend their time with us. It's very valuable and we really appreciate it. And it's only the more awesome that we continue to get such lovely answers from such interesting creatives, Keen being another great example of that. So we know you enjoyed it. And again, thank you, Keen, for joining us today.
Seriously, thank you all for listening. Thank you to Keen for coming on the show, giving us some really great insight, and then just hanging around and shooting the shit for a little bit. We had a great time. We learned a lot. Keep your eyes open for Shot in the Dark. Might be coming to a festival near you. Might be coming out on VOD soon. Who knows? We'll keep you posted on that. And go check out KeenMcRae.com and at KeenMcRae on Instagram. Check out his work. He's doing a lot of really cool stuff right now. We feel lucky to have gotten him on the show. And we hope you guys enjoyed this interview as much as we did, because I know that we had just an absolute blast with this discussion.
Yes. And remember, all those links will be provided in the podcast description. But check out the website. Check out his Instagram. Gardner just told you where to find it. Keaton told you where to find it during the interview. And you'll have a link that you can just click on in the podcast description. So check out his really cool work. Like we said, Shot in the Dark, coming out soon. He's acted in other stuff beforehand that we went over during the interview. And there's a bunch of music videos too, which we also discussed in the interview. So check out all of his work. There's something for everyone. And again, thank you to Keen for stopping by today. And thank you to our listeners as well. We appreciate our returning listeners, as well as any new listeners we might have picked up today for the first time. We hope everyone enjoyed this, and maybe we convinced you to stick around for our other releases as well. Or you could also check out our back catalog. We have over 80 episodes already released. Like I said, we have MCU episodes, other superhero episodes. We have relevant stuff like when Batman came out, we did that. We went over the Batman trilogy, the Dark Knight trilogy as well during that time. We're always talking to filmmakers, always talking to people involved in the filmmaking process. We've talked to people like Steve Chorney, who does the art posters. So really, everyone involved in the filmmaking process. We'd love to get more involved in some of the behind the scenes stuff. Really, we like to talk to anyone involved in the filmmaking process or just writers in general. We've talked to people, authors of books as well. So check out all of our past episodes and stay tuned for our future ones. You can find us anywhere you listen to podcasts by searching the letters GDT. And when I say anywhere, I mean anywhere. You can find us on Apple Podcasts. You can find us on Spotify. You can find us on the free apps. Anywhere you listen to podcasts, all you have to do is type in those three letters, GDT, and you will find us, and it's a good day to pod. And you can subscribe to us and leave a 5-star review if you want. That way you'll never miss an episode, and we will see that you like our podcast, and the 5-star reviews help us out. So stop by on the podcast app, subscribe, you'll never miss an episode. And if you want to also follow us along on social media, you can do that as well. We're available on Twitter and Instagram at Good Data Pod, and on Facebook at GDT Podcast. We try to post all our episodes there, let you guys know what's up. So if you don't want to just subscribe, you can also follow along on social media. That is all for today. Thank you guys for listening. We will talk to you again next week.
As always, thank you for tuning in, folks. We love you, and we'll see you on the next one.